Economy through entrepreneurial programs, services, and resources. More information on the Academy can be found at www.ael.uiuc.edu.
Welcome back to the second hour of Focus 580. This is our morning talk program. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us. The producers for the program, Harriet Williamson, Martha Deal, Jason Croft is at the controls. This morning, in this hour of the show, we'll have a healthcare topic for you, something that we try to do once a year, at least, on the program. We'll be talking about vision and vision care. Throughout the year, we have different physicians on the program. Sometimes we have people who specialize in particular things. We have a pediatrician, we have an OBGYN, we have a family practice doctor who are here on a pretty regular basis. And then we have some other things that we try to do also at least once a year that focus on specific parts of the body, and that's what we're doing here this morning. Our guest is Dr. Jim Farron. He's an optometrist at Carl Clinic. He's been with us before here on the program, generally in the summer. We've been doing this for quite a few years to give folks an opportunity to ask questions about vision and vision issues. Now, we're certainly open to whatever questions you may have, and I know that he will do his best to give you an answer. The thing I'd like to caution people about is that here on the program, we can't do diagnosis over the phone. And whenever we have a physician here, I try to make that pitch right up front. Now, I don't want to discourage anyone from calling because we do these shows to try to give you an opportunity to ask questions. So it can be a place to start, get some basic knowledge, ask some basic questions. And if you have real concerns about your health or the health of somebody in your family, you need to go to someone who can see you. But having said all that, we certainly welcome questions. 333-9455 is Champaign-Urbana. That's the number if you're here locally where we are. We do also have a toll-free line, good anywhere that you can hear us. Excuse me. And that is 800-222-9455. So at any point here, you have questions, you can give us a call. Well, thanks for being here.
Good morning, Dave. Once again. Always pleasure to join you.
One thing, maybe just real quick, I think we're getting some callers lined up that I'd like to say right at the beginning, or have you talk about at the beginning here. It's in the form of a nag. I guess we do that when we have our dermatologists on here, and we remind people how important it is to wear sunscreen to protect your sun from your skin from the rays of the sun. There is also reason to be concerned about your eyes and exposure to ultraviolet, which means that it's a good idea that if you're going to be out in the sun, you wear something that will screen your eyes as well, whether that's prescription eyeglasses that people wear for vision or sunglasses, as you don't want to buy the cheapest sunglasses, but you also want to take a look at UV and sunglasses.
Yeah, because we've talked about that in the past on inexpensive, non-ophthalmic quality, if you will. And usually if it's ophthalmic quality, it'll be listed a little sticker talking about the UV capability. But often very inexpensive is just a piece of plastic that has been tinted. So it cuts down glare and then reduces the glare to the eye. But often causes the pupil to stay a little wider and if anything, permits more potentially harmful rays to enter.
Okay. So wear sunglasses when you're outside and make sure that you do have the UV protection. Now, if you wear eyeglasses for vision, for vision correction, sometimes people will actually have UV coatings on the lenses. How much difference is there between just a regular lens for correction with no UV coating and one that actually has one? Is it worth going and taking an extra step?
I don't think it's a bad thing. It's, you know, relatively inexpensive, although the ophthalmic quality eyeglasses have quite a bit of capability in screening. I was just going to say, though, I was just reading an article the other day, just hats outside screen over 50% of harmful rays, just having a bill on a cap.
Oh, so not only does that good for shading your face,
yeah,
it actually shades your eyes.
Yeah, it just is, you know, it's very simple things like that.
Yeah, okay. So it is something that's worth thinking about, not just for your skin, but also for your eyes. Okay. Well, I'll tell you, we've got some callers here lined up and ready to go, and they're all in Champaign. So we'll start there. We'll take them in the order they came in and start with line number one right here. Hello.
Hi. I'm calling. I guess it was November. I went in for my regular exam, and I wanted to kind of change my contact lens wearing a bit, and so I had been using the, I guess they were the, you clean them every day, So I guess, and you replace them like every few months or something. So anyway, I decided I wanted to switch. So I got prescribed the ones that you wear every day without taking them out, and they were supposed to last for like a month. Well, I could only wear them for like a week, if even that long, without cleaning. And then once I even cleaned them, I couldn't wear them any longer. My eyes just wouldn't take them. They would get irritated very easily. And so then we switched over to the daily ones that you throw out every day. And now with those have been okay. They're better, of course. I don't get as irritated, but they seem to get foggy more often. And so now I'm just wondering, I don't really want to go back to the old ones because you had to buy all that stuff all the time, and it was just a pain. And actually, the daily ones are great because I don't have to buy anything. I throw them out at the end of the night, put my glasses on, you know, go to bed, and put a new pair in the morning. Are there any other options, or is this basically what I'm going to be stuck with?
Well, a couple of things. You sort of covered it. First of all, just because something is, I assume that you were wearing that focused day and night lens.
Yes.
For 30 day. Just because something is approved doesn't mean it's going to work, and for probably most people, often it won't. And just as a comment, the majority of people still, whether in almost all replacement or frequent replacement lenses, other than obviously the ones you mentioned, taking them out each day, are approved for usually up to 7 days of wear. That one, that particular lens is 30-day.
Okay.
But most people still, even with that lens, may be more comfortable, but the majority of people still take their lenses out at night.
Okay.
And so the fact that you could not tolerate it is not exceptionally unusual.
Oh, okay.
And probably would be more typical. Very few people do the 30-day, and frankly, I'm not a big proponent of extended wear.
Is that right?
For many people. Yeah, I think just people. The lenses, just like you say, as the day goes on, as the days go on, the week goes on, the eyes start to produce more secretion, more mucoid, and it just deposits on the lens. Also, though, so going on your manual cleaning, there are many no-rub solutions that you don't need to really involve yourself with that.
Well, yeah, I'm now to the point where I can't use, I have to use a specific kind. I can't recall the name of the brand, but I'm allergic to most the regular
solutions.
No-rub,
mm-hmm.
I use a chemical one. It's got the little vial.
Mm-hmm. The hydrogen peroxide based, which has made a resurgence recently on lenswear, yes.
And so that's, mm-hmm. I have to use that. I can't even use the ones where it's mm-hmm. no rub, you just stick it in mm-hmm. the, so I can't use that. I've tried that.
Well, it sounds to me like the daily disposables probably are a good match for your condition.
Yeah, but the only thing is then they, but you know, like even right now, I just put them in at 8 o'clock this morning,
mm-hmm.
and I'm already getting fogginess.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't know if that's an effect of just my eyes are like
that.
So
do you tend to have allergies this time of year or something like that?
I do. Could that be related?
No,
I'm sure
that's, you know, when an eye is producing it. Perhaps there are some various pharmaceutical agents that can be used prior to and after you take the lenses out that might help correct that. And, of course, frequent lubrication during the day with a contact lens lubricant might be of some benefit to you, too.
Okay, so if I use that, will that help? So I just kind of thought that with the fogginess, that if I put a lubricant, it's not that it needs more lubricating, it's just that it's getting yucky, you know?
So. It just helps cleanse the surface of the lens in the eye.
Okay, so maybe try that.
Mm-hmm.
And you're saying that there are some eye drops for allergies I can put on before
mm-hmm.
the lenses?
And after, that you might discuss with your eye care specialist.
Okay, so those would be available too.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, good. Any specific brands?
Just a general comment. That would be something you and your doctor would talk about.
Okay, all right. Well, good. Okay, well, thanks so much for your help.
All right,
welcome.
Well, thanks for the call. Let's go next to line number 3. This is also Champagne. Hello.
Hello, is line 3?
Yes, go ahead.
Oh, thank you. I have two questions. I have a tearing constantly of one eye, and they call it dry eye. What causes that?
Dry eye as we age, often the tissue, it seems like a contradiction. People have told you you have dry eye, yet your eye waters all the time. It's a difficult problem. Just know not that it's any consolation. Many people are bothered, and sometimes one eye more than the other, which is a possibility too. I would say dry eye, like dry skin and dry tissue, is an age-related issue.
Okay.
You can't totally resolve it, assuming that there's no other underlying healthcare issues. But lubrication, the concept there is by keeping the eye in a more moist condition, the eye doesn't respond in an exaggerated fashion and produce this constant level of tearing.
Huh.
I mean, that's the idea behind that.
Would drops alleviate that?
Well, that's the lubrication, yeah. That's what they were speaking of.
Well, my other question is, what's the difference between an ophthalmologist and an optometrist?
Both are eye care specialists. Both do general eye care, and an ophthalmologist does eye surgery, an optometrist does not. The third person in the group is called an optician, and that's the person who usually is in the glasses store and fits and adjusts your glasses.
Okay.
So those are what we call the three O's. Many ophthalmologists also do general eye care, but primarily they do surgery. For instance, at our group at Carl, we even have some subspecialists within the ophthalmology category, several retinal specialists and also a glaucoma specialist.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay, thanks for the call. And again, we'll talk with somebody here also in Champaign. This is line number two. Hello.
Hi. Mm-hmm. Question for the doctor. This is beside the point, but I got lupus, and I have to see an ophthalmologist every 6 months, and I'm sure the doctor knows why. But now, I've been wearing Ray-Ban sunglasses for, probably 20 years. Now, and I never thought to ask my doctor, how well do they work for UV rays? I mean, they're the best glasses that I've ever worn.
Yeah, I'm sure they would be fine. It sounds like it's a quality pair of sunglasses would have the, I would assume just from what you said, the appropriate UV filtration of the lens.
Okay, it's just that, you don't want to lose them because they're very expensive, but I've lost maybe two pair in the last 20 years, so I've had to buy new ones, and they're about $100. So you think, they're fine?
Yes, I would assume they would be.
Okay. All right, then. Thank you.
All mm-hmm. right, thank you. Other questions are welcome. Our guest this morning is Dr. Jim Farron. He's an optometrist at Carl Clinic. We're talking about vision and eye care, and you can call in and talk with him. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. Maybe we could return for a second to the contact lens question. I was thinking about some of the questions of the very first caller. It seems that over time what has happened is we started out when there was only one kind of contact lens, and it was a rigid lens.
Yes.
And some people could tolerate it, and some people couldn't.
Mm-hmm. That's very true, Dave.
Then we started to have various kinds of softer lenses that then some people said, well, this is a lot more comfortable. But then we started out, I think, with some of the first soft lenses. Still, the idea was that at the end of the day, you took it out, and you cleaned it, and then you didn't. It was a daily lens. You had just had that one lens that you took out every night and cleaned, and then you used that for, as long until it would fall apart, and then you would get another one. Then it seemed that we have moved now to successively kind of lighter, softer lenses that they say you can wear for longer periods of time. Although, again, as you say, every person is different, so it sort of depends on how well you do. There are these lenses that are approved for people wearing extended periods of time. And then there are the disposable lenses that you wear one day, you take them out, and you throw them away. The next day, you open up a brand new one, and you don't have some of the same issues of cleaning that you do with the other lenses, mm-hmm. because at the end of the day, you just throw it away.
And the reality is, even on shorter span lenses, say 2 or 4 week lenses, things are not going to change that much. I've always felt that the daily disposables have a place, although they tend to be a little bit more pricey, and I guess in my mind, how much is going to change in a week? assuming you you take the lens and rinse it and store it properly. I think it's also, for a lot of people, a convenience issue. Mm-hmm. They just take it away. You know, we're in a, to some extent, a disposable society, so why not add to the milieu with the disposable lenses?
Yeah. What now is the, is there, among all of these various options, is there one that seems to be the most common, most popularly prescribed?
Yeah, I was just looking at some numbers. Well, first of all, the as you said, just historically, rigid lenses then develop a new material, gas permeable. So most of the more oxygen transmissible lenses, are still around, probably less than 10% of the population wears them. The vast majority of people wear some form of soft lens. Mm-hmm. And of that population, the vast majority, probably 85 or 90%, wear some form of disposable. When I say, in my mind, disposable, not necessarily every day. It could be every 2 weeks, every month. The point is you don't use it till it drops, if you will.
Yeah, right.
You replace it at some prescribed or consistent interval. And then you threw in the other aspect of extended wear, which soft lenses became an issue or a factor in the market in the 80s. Now, of course, they're the dominant feature. But there was some lenses, the traditional one lens, hopefully last a year, with extended wear in the mid-80s, very unsuccessful. It just did not work for people and it sort of died away. Then in the late 80s, early 90s, Johnson & Johnson introduced a replacement lens called AccuView, and one of the more popular lenses today. And that was also approved for up to 7 days. A lot of people had more success with that. But again, the majority of people still, even though it is approved for a week or whatever it might be, is taken out at night or maybe just worn on a periodic basis overnight. The majority of people, I would say, to answer specifically your question, probably the majority of people wear lenses that they replace probably 2 weeks to 3 months. There are a couple. Basically, there's the daily disposable. Then there's a 2 to 4 week lens, I would call. And then there's a monthly replacement, and there's another lens, maybe quarterly.
Mm-hmm. Is there anything that's on the horizon in terms of material, what it is the lenses are made of that suggest any great advantage over what we have now in terms of comfort? And I guess maybe one of the big issues is that your eyes have to, like the rest of your body, your eyes have to breathe, and so that the lenses at least have to be that permeable.
Yes, they're in the last couple years ago, we the first caller was wearing a lens, SEBA focused day and night lens, made out of a new material, still soft lens. I mean, if you looked at it, you would not notice difference. It's a silicone hydrogel. Much more permeable. The lens was approved for 30 days consecutive wear. Again, that's a little bit of a misnomer because the majority of people probably wouldn't do that. And several other lenses, Bausch & Lomb has another lens they've introduced called Pure Vision. AccuView has an advance, and SEBA has come out with another lens called Optics. They all now have this base of this silicone. Really, there's been a dramatic shift in the last year to this material within the ranks of soft lens wearers, which promises to be more comfortable, more oxygen permeable, and consequently transfers into hopefully more comfort and better wearing results.
Okay. Well, we got some other callers here lined up, and we'll speak next with someone in Lovington. That's our line one. Hello.
Yeah, I had a comment and a question. My comment is that I've been buying safety glasses, and you can get them in a bunch of different styles, and they're 99.9% UV resistant or whatever. And I find the quality looking through them to be a lot better than sunglasses that you can buy for less than $20. And now you can get them even with bifocal, with a magnifying lens on the bottom of them.
That's correct.
Which brings me to my question.
Okay.
Kind of need bifocals now. Is there anything you can do short of corrective lenses to help your vision as you get older, I guess?
Well, we were just, Dave and I were just talking about that. Basically, no.
Okay.
There is, well, with a preface, there is a procedure that has been promoted recently that purports to preserve or permit you to, as say you move into your 40s and beyond, to still be able to read without glasses. It's not LASIK. LASIK is primarily for improving distance vision, particularly with nearsighted people. But some people have had some success with this procedure. It's called CK, or conductive keratoplasty, where radio waves are used to steepen the cornea of one eye and give some reading vision. Sort of like, I don't know if you've ever heard the concept of monovision, where some people wear contacts as they get into middle age. They wear one contact for far and one contact for near.
Mm-hmm.
So that, anyway, to answer your question, that's a procedure that is out there right now, but is difficult to change the loss of flexibility in the eye after 40, and very little is out there that would give the results of a pair of well-prescribed glasses.
Well, that brings up another question in my mind. Is the monovision system, is that something you can wear in a dusty environment, or contact still not really too hot if you happen to be in a dusty environment once in a while?
Well, first of all, it sounds like it would almost be a moot point. It sounds like in your environment where you work, you need safety glasses.
Mm-hmm.
So, and again, contact lenses, wearing contact lenses so that you could almost get prescription glasses if that's what you need. Also, in certain work environments, the monovision, there is also bifocal contact lenses too, both soft and hard, that some people have had some success with too, although monovision has seemed for many people to work a little bit better. But to me, the monovision in your work environment might sometimes put you a little bit at risk, possibly safety-wise.
Unless you wear safety glasses anyway.
Yeah, and also in the fact that it does change your depth perception. I don't know what your occupation is, but
True. That
would be something there. So I don't think the dusty environment necessarily negates contact lens wear, but it sure doesn't make it any easier.
Thank you.
Okay. Right, thanks for the call. Here we're talking about a condition called presbyopia, which means something like, old vision, old eyes.
Yeah, it's a loss of flexibility. Yeah, it's not fully understood, and we've talked on it before, but what happens as we get in our 40s, just consistently across the board, people lose, if they've worn glasses or contacts, they still have relatively the same far vision, but they can't focus up close, and so they need a bifocal or some form of adjunct to their contact lenses to give near and far vision. And, of course, a person who's always had pretty good vision probably is going to continue to have reasonably good vision, but now whenever they pick up any printed material, they'll need reading glasses. And so often people, rather than having to take glasses on and off, even though they may need to not wear glasses all the time, will wear bifocals, like sort of like the gentleman was speaking of.
Yeah.
It is inevitable, but it's relatively well resolved with optical devices. And by and large, there's really not a lot you can do to change it any more than you can do to retard aging.
And you just touched on the fact that indeed there are some people who are promoting a surgery to mm-hmm. correct, mm-hmm. to address presbyopia. And it just sounds like your overall feeling is that you're not really sure about it, either whether it will do what it's intended to do or whether there's even any point to try to think about a surgical correction for that in the first place.
Some people have been happy, just understanding the procedure. I don't know if we want to go into it to any extent, but it is not a permanent procedure by any means. It's not inexpensive. Usually it's well over $1,000. You have it done on one eye, but when you do it on the eye too, it also at least to some extent blurs your distance vision. So it is a form of monovision. If you did it on both eyes, then you might have a little bit better reading, but then you couldn't see far away.
Mm-hmm.
So they do it in one eye. As I said, through these radio waves, they steepen the cornea, and by doing that, you give near focus, at least some. But it still would not be, and say if somebody had really an intense occupation where they did a lot of desk work, I don't think they would be totally happy with it, in my opinion.
Well, it sounds like bottom line would be, as far as I could see, if someone still had pretty good all-around vision, particularly if their distance vision was still good, and they were just having trouble reading, it seemed to me not to make a whole lot of sense to have $1,000 surgery when you could just get a pair of reading glasses and have that take care of the problem.
I think it would be hard to argue against that thought. Plus, you know, the reality is, too, you are altering what is, prior to this procedure, healthy tissue, and I assume mm-hmm. and the long-term complications have not been demonstrated, in good or bad, but you still are taking something that there was not a problem with, that was easily addressed through an optical device, and gave you essentially, with that slight inconvenience, about like you saw before.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's go on here. We'll talk next with someone in line number two, and I believe this is someone in Champaign. Hello.
Hi. Mm-hmm. This is kind of a follow-up from what you've just been talking about. Is there anything new in the bifocal contact area? I've tried monovision and can't really adjust to that, and I have, you know, regular bifocal glasses, but I just find them to be, you know, having been blessed with good distance vision for my entire life, I find the frames to be very distracting. I don't like the feel of them on my face, and, you know, I end up pulling on and off.
Do you have so you don't need correction to see far away?
Experimented a few years ago with some bifocal contacts, and, you know, they could get my distance or my close vision fine, but it would compromise the distance vision so much so that I would feel uncomfortable driving.
Mm-hmm. No, I think you're right. There obviously continue to be new products out there, and so, but is it going to be as good as a pair of glasses? Probably not, because with reading glasses, it sounds like all you need. You know, you have two balanced, focused eyes. But if a person is willing to accept some level of compromise, there are some new products out there that your eye care specialist, I'm sure, can work with you, various bifocal contacts. Is there anything out there that's revolutionary that's going to make your vision like it was or like it is with glasses? I would say no.
No. I was curious. I have a sister who's very nearsighted, and she recently tried some bifocal contacts, and she just loves them. She mm-hmm. thinks it's just like having, you know, good vision. But is she possibly more happy with it because she's worn contacts all her life and she's always had really bad distance vision?
Well, I think I would probably answer it yes. I think people who've had good vision all their life tend to do, in my mind, less well with something because the motivation, they just need glasses for reading. And then when they wear contacts, say monovision or a bifocal, then what they had for far usually is not as good. Just like you said, and I agree with that, even with the bifocal, your vision is compromised. When someone is has been nearsighted all their life, first of all, they've been used to optical devices. They probably understand the level of compromise, and they're more dependent on eyewear. So they would probably accept maybe something that you, who've always had good vision, would be less likely to do.
Okay, so I'm just too whiny.
No. I mean, you know, I would say there's a level of what we want to do for the return.
Okay.
And is it worth the effort for someone who's got relatively good vision to wear contacts, or for a lot of people, it's not.
Yeah. And so there's nothing revolutionary.
No, they continue to have new products coming out, and, you know, there may be something that will meet your level of need and ability to compromise.
Okay.
But it's tough to be just a basic pair of reading glasses if that's all you need.
But there's no one particular contact that many people find success with in this kind of situation?
No, you know, there's different permutations. Of course, you mentioned monovision, and then sometimes we've even used a modified monovision with a bifocal contact in just one eye. Mm. And then there's different ways of a little stronger bifocal contact in one eye. Of course, the stronger you make the contact for reading, it takes a little bit away from distance, so there's just different ways to modify that.
Okay. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
All right, thanks for the call. One of the things that we've certainly talked about on and off over the years is monovision. Just to make sure that people know what that is. That is when for people who wear contact lenses, there is one contact, one lens, one eye that's set up for the distance, and the other eye is set up for the close work.
That's right.
And there apparently are people who can adjust. Just to me, the very idea of it just makes me feel dizzy. But apparently there are a number of people who can very successfully adapt that technique. And I imagine it takes your brain a little bit to figure out how you want to balance
that information. Usually, if people are going to go into it, they'll know relatively quickly in a couple of days if it's going to work. It's not something that you condition yourself to. To me, my experience has shown me that, you know, either you like it or you don't. And by the same token, it's not necessarily an all or none, because a lot of times people may only use the monovision in certain select occasions. Say they're a computer operator, so the monovision might not be something like that, may not be the solution during the day. But in the evening, say they go out for dinner, wouldn't it be nice to maybe be able to read the menu and see halfway decent for distance and not have to depend on eye glasses? So, you know, sometimes people need to think, or say they use monovision during the day and they have maybe not a real intense close job, but they play tennis three times a week, so then they maybe need to switch back to their glasses or two distance contacts. So you can vary it depending on your activities, too.
Okay. Well, our guest this morning is Dr. Jim Farron. He's an optometrist at Carl Clinic in Urbana, and we're talking about vision and eye care. And if you had questions, give us a call. I know he'll do his best to help you out. 333-9455, toll-free, 800-222-9455. The next caller is in Urbana and line 3. Hi.
Good morning. Mm-hmm. I wanted to ask about nearsightedness and if that's genetic or how that works. My sister and I both had to start wearing glasses as kids, and our parents never needed them until they were middle-aged and needed reading glasses. I was wondering if you could explain how that works.
Yes, I think without a doubt somewhere in your family history there was the gene for myopia or nearsightedness. And that you and your sister had it, although both your parents did not. Again, I'm far from a geneticist, but it's definitely myopia. At least higher levels of myopia is genetic. There is, in my opinion, some influence on occupation and low nearsightedness too, because often you'll see people who have relatively good vision and they become graduate students, or they're in a very near focus and they tend to get slightly nearsighted. But I would say in your case, there was definitely in the family history a nearsighted trait, if you will. And what nearsightedness is the eyeball basically is too long, the length of the eye, relative to the size of the eye. So the focus is too close to the person, and either glasses or contacts need to move that focus out. So sometimes people get confused, but nearsighted basically means you see better near than far without correction.
And so if I'm married to another nearsighted person, are our kids just pretty much doomed to be nearsighted?
I don't want to, you know, as I said, I'm not a geneticist, but I would say the likelihood of them becoming nearsighted is pretty strong.
Okay. I did have one other question.
Sure.
You were talking about sun exposure earlier and how important it is to keep our eyes protected. I have a really hard time keeping sunglasses or a hat on my 2-year-old son, and I was wondering how dangerous sun exposure is to young children's eyes in particular.
I think it's, you know, like so many things, many people don't wear sunglasses or hats or bills or anything, and they're fine. I don't think it's an end-all. It's just something that you strive for. I don't think necessarily it's going to be an absolute harming agent. Just be sensitive to maybe not excessive exposure.
So it's not like sun exposure to the skin where damage at a really early age can do a lot more.
That's correct. I would say definitely it's not necessarily a guarantee that you're going to damage that child's eyes, no.
Okay. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thanks. As I think it is true, and you correct me if it's wrong, is that the primary issue here with sun and eyes is cataracts, and that's generally something that you're not going to see developing in people until they get at least over 50, and probably it's further than that.
Yeah, no, I would say probably
that.
More like 70. Yeah, yeah. I would say the sun, you can't, it's like a lot of things in life, there's potential harm. Is it going to be, you know, terrible for everybody? Probably not. Plus, I would say in our climate, too, I think if you lived in Phoenix, Arizona, it might be a little bit bigger an issue than Champaign,
yeah.
Illinois.
And I think it's also been an issue places like Australia, for example,
yes.
where people are going to be outside a lot, where the sun is shining a lot, and maybe also there's some concerns mm-hmm. about what's happening with the ozone there and how and whether that's doing its sort of screening job.
Yeah, but the cataracts, and also there's some reports that the ultraviolet can affect the internal structure of the eye, the retina, and damage that. And there have been, I guess, in extreme cases where people would stare out at the sun for extended periods of time when you would get a condition called solar retinopathy, where their mm-hmm. retinas literally were damaged.
Yeah. Okay. Well, don't do that.
No, and it actually...
You heard it here, folks. Don't do that.
Not so much now, but it was interesting in the 60s, you know, in a different age where hallucinogenics were more in mainstream. There were a number of cases where people would do that and then just sort of meditate at the sun and induce in their eyes tremendous damage.
Mm, okay.
I wouldn't know anything about that.
Well, let's go on to another caller. We'll go to Champagne Line 1. Hello.
Hello?
Yes, go ahead.
I wear gas permeable contact lenses, and recently I've had more of a problem with them getting what I call blurry and after they've been cleaned. And I've been told this is because of a protein buildup in my tears. And I understand some research has shown that it might help to take flaxseed oil capsules, mm-hmm. but that breaks down protein.
Mm-hmm. Well, actually, obviously lubricating the eyes and a healthy diet and so forth. But the articles that I have read, and I don't know if, you know, it's but flaxseed in conjunction with fish oil tablet, two of them together seem to potentiate each other. And there's been some research indicating that can help with dry eyes. So I would agree with, that, but often it's in conjunction with fish oil.
So you should take both.
If you follow the literature, yes.
Mm-hmm. Great. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. All right. And thank you. And let's go to next, line number 4. Someone listening this morning in Indiana, right here. Hello. It's caller there on line 4 in Indiana.
Hello.
Yes.
I wondered if you could give some general talk about the eyes and diabetes. I just recently was diagnosed type 2, and they explained to me that the changing of the ability to read the 55-mile-an-hour speed limit signs probably had a lot to do with high sugar, and they explained that the eye itself is changed in, I guess, in length or shortness, and that it accounted for the blurriness. And I've been to an ophthalmologist just for a quick thing to check out certain things. I'm going back, but I just wondered, when one does get a prescription, I presume that means that you finally got your sugar level at a proper place so that the eye is going to stay basically the same length. And I was wondering if those prescriptions are, you do them every, year, 2 years or something like that. Just what are information you might be able to give out? Thanks.
Well, yeah, you're talking about two. At first, when you were speaking, I thought you were talking about the complications, but you're talking about the vision change. Yeah. Generally speaking, if someone becomes diabetic or a type 2 like you mentioned, or type 1 being an insulin-dependent diabetic, type 2 is usually an oral medication, until that condition is stabilized, I think it's well to not get a prescription because generally eyes do not change over a period of weeks or even days for sure. But with unstable blood sugar levels, that can cause the eye to change focus. But once that condition is stabilized, then I think you could feel relatively confident that your prescription is not going to change more than it would if you were not a diabetic. You know, as you age, often the eyes will shift, but only because it's aging, and that goes for everyone. But if I became a diabetic or I was diagnosed as a type 2 diabetic and was put on an oral medication, I would make sure that that condition, after consultation with my doctor, was stable and the readings were consistent before I visited my eye care specialist for a final prescription, and would be a little bit hesitant to change before that too, because I've seen so often it'll shift, the condition is stabilized, and then people go right back to what they were.
Okay. We have about 15 minutes left with Dr. Jim Farron. He's an optometrist from Carl Clinic, who we're talking about vision and eye care. Just real quick, though, let me pass on some weather information to you. The Storm Prediction Center has issued a severe thunderstorm watch for parts of northern and central Illinois and northern Indiana, effective this Wednesday afternoon and evening until 6 o'clock. Hail to 1.5 inches in diameter. Thunderstorm winds 70 miles an hour and dangerous lightning are possible in these areas. And in the immediate AM 580 severe weather coverage area, this severe thunderstorm watch includes the following counties in Illinois: Champaign, DeWitt, Ford, Piatt, and Vermilion. So keep in mind, a severe thunderstorm watch means conditions are favorable for severe storms in and close to the watch area. Keep an eye on the sky for threatening weather conditions, and of course, stay tuned to AM 580 for the latest weather information and possible warnings. Severe thunderstorms can and occasionally do produce tornadoes. And again, this is a severe thunderstorm watch that will be in effect until 6 o'clock tonight for parts of northern and central Illinois and northern Indiana. And in our severe weather coverage area, it includes Champaign, DeWitt, Ford, Piatt, and Vermilion counties. We'll have more on the weather coming up at 12:35 as part of the afternoon magazine. We will go on here and talk with some other folks, and I think our next caller is in Normal, line number two. Hello.
Hello.
Mm-hmm.
Could your guest talk a little bit about the floaters that sometimes occur in the eye, the little black specks or rings or waves? And I'm not talking about something drastic that occurs that would be a big veil or sheet over the eye, but sometimes when they occur more often than usual and then subsequently maybe disappear or decrease, when should you be concerned about them and what causes them? I'll just hang up and listen. Thank you. Okay, thanks.
All people, if they are attuned, have what we call vitreous floaters. The inside of the eye has a gel-like fluid called vitreous, and of course you have tissue on the inside lining of the eye. As new tissue is formed, cells are flaked off and they float, and often in before they settle out, if you will. And in contrast, often against a bright background, sunlight and or a white page, if you're reading, sometimes you'll see these little amorphous, amoeba-like, semi-translucent little blobs. All of us, to some extent, have them, some more than others. In almost all cases, I would say the vast majority of cases, they're benign, as I would define it, as a benign nuisance. If you have a sudden dramatic increase of floaters in an eye, particularly if it's accompanied by flashing light, sparks, then you might want to immediately contact your eye care specialist and make a visit. That might indicate a detachment or a tear of the retina, which is a serious problem. But that's, I guess, the qualification I'd put, a sudden dramatic increase and accompanied by flashing light, then you should head in. But periodic spots that you see probably are, as we said, more of a benign nuisance than anything that you should worry about.
Okay.
And you can't really do too much with them. That's the problem. You can't strain the eye. In some esoteric treatments, some places they've tried to use a laser to vaporize them, but that also induces a potential harm to the eye, too, as side effects. So for most people, you just live with it.
All right. Next is line number three. This is a caller in Champaign. Hello.
Good afternoon, or good morning, I guess it is yet. Mm-hmm. You've talked about surgical correction of vision, and you've also mentioned cataracts, but I don't think you've said anything about intraocular lens implants to correct visions, or IOLs. In fact, I'm particularly interested in the accommodating IOLs. I know there's a few of them out there, like crystal lens or something. This is spelled with K's, accommodative 1CU. Do you have
You're talking about the intraocular lens that is used after you have cataract surgery?
Yes, I believe that's the case.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, when you have cataract surgery, obviously they're continuing to develop. My sense is that they're not. Many surgeons still would prefer to use the fixed focus lenses, but that would be something that you and if assuming a person was going to have cataract surgery could probably talk with their surgeon about. When you have cataract surgery, the lens in the eye, which is the cataract, is removed, and you have to replace it with a lens, the intraocular lens, as you talked about. That generally has been a fixed focus, so it can compensate for distance, but you can't have the near focus. There have been some work with bifocal, if you will, implants. That's really what you're talking about with these accommodating lenses.
No, these are ones that actually flex. If I can take just a moment, for instance, that says enables the contraction of the ciliary enables the lens to change optical power during contraction of the ciliary muscles to actually allow near objects to be focused.
Mm-hmm. Well, you in effect are giving that person the effect of a bifocal in their eye.
No, I don't think it's
no,
fixed
you
focus.
Talked about
they actually
I'm not
flex.
Saying fixed focus. I'm talking about a bifocal where you have two focuses, near and far, and that's what you're speaking of.
No. This one says it actually flexes. It's not fixed focus.
Well, that's what I just said, is that it's giving you the ability to see both far and near.
So the idea is that it would be more like the way your eye functioned
right.
before.
Right. That's what he's speaking of. Okay. And it's something, if you're interested, you know, if you have cataracts, it's something you should talk with your surgeon about.
All right. Thank you. Mm-hmm.
But this is not – is anybody thinking about that as an option for a vision correction for someone who is otherwise eyes are otherwise healthy and they just wear glasses or contact lenses? I suppose ideally you would say, well – if you can do that for somebody who has cataracts, why not do that as a way of correcting
vision? There's actually a procedure called lensectomy where you take out the natural lens and you could put an implant in, if you will, or sometimes when you're very nearsighted, you just take the lens out and the focus becomes more normal. So yes, it's not widely done, but it is a possibility. But as an adjunct to cataract surgery, though, it's very interesting with the implant and sort of what you're talking about. Because when you take the cataract lens out, that really changes the focus dramatically. The lens in the eye supplied about 40% of the eye's focusing power, and that's why prior to the advent of the implant in the mid-80s, people who had cataract surgery had to wear very thick glasses after the surgery, which, of course, you don't see anymore.
Yeah.
The implant takes care of that. But so often now, even when a person has cataract surgery and they say they've been very nearsighted all their life, not only does the implant replace the previously opaque cataract lens, but also the surgeon can choose a power that compensates for the inherent nearsightedness, say, of the eye. So a person who's worn glasses maybe or contacts since they were very young now has relatively good vision, may often still need a slight correction or perhaps reading glasses. But that implant not only took care of the cataract, but also helped neutralize the nearsightedness.
Yeah, okay. Very good.
Is that, that makes sense?
Yeah. No, I think it's – yeah, that's good. Let's see if we can get at least one more caller here, and that would be the next in line, and I believe that would be Urbana, line one. Hello.
Hi. I wonder if you could talk about macular degeneration, in particular the causes and the types and the treatments.
Well, that's a pretty broad question.
Yep.
Just as a general way, it is a deterioration in the retina. It affects about 25% of those over 70. Use that as a cutoff. It has a varying – sometimes one eye is more affected than the other. There are a number of different treatments for it, although the reality is there's nothing that really can restore your vision like it was. Why it is, it's an age-related condition not clearly understood, although I was just reading an article, smoking increases the incidence of macular degeneration in aging population by 50%. So lifestyle can have some influence. I do think heredity is a big factor, and Caucasians tend to be much more susceptible, say, than African-Americans to this condition, particularly fair-skinned. Individuals,
pardon?
Fair-skinned, lightly pigmented people.
Yeah,
I don't know if that's a sort of a general.
Well, can you say anything besides about possible prevention other than not smoking?
Well, healthy lifestyle. I'm sure if you talk to your general physician about proper diet, exercise, all those would apply to the eyes. Some people maintain supplements are of some benefit. I don't think that's a bad thing. There are a number of products, eye vitamins that. Would not hurt a person to take. And beyond that, it's a tough problem that a lot of times if you've had a hereditary family history of it, it's hard to avoid. You're just going to get it like a lot of things.
Yep. Thanks.
Mm-hmm. All right, thanks. Unfortunately, it sounds like it's still something that we don't really understand as well as we would like, and that often the options for treating the condition are not terribly good.
There are some lasers sometimes used to try to preserve and control it a little bit. There's been retinal translocation, just a lot of some very complex surgeries, but the reality is, by and large, it's still not an effective treatment, and it is probably the leading cause of visual impairment of population, say, over 75.
Maybe real quick here, I just ask, what are the recommendations for checking people for glaucoma?
I would say after age 40, an eye exam every couple years. If you have a tendency, if your pressure is running high, your eye doctor may recommend more frequent exams.
Okay. So even if you say your vision is pretty good, you don't feel you have a problem that way. Once you get to a certain age, it's good to just check.
After 40, every 2 or 3 years, yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for being here.
It's been a pleasure.
Our guest, Dr. Jim Farron, he's an optometrist at Carl Clinic in Urbana. Our show, Focus 580, made possible in part by a grant from Bodywork Associates this year, celebrating their 23rd anniversary. Bodywork Associates has been providing professional massage therapy to Champaign-Urbana since 1982. Focus 580 is also made possible with support from the Art Mart in the Lincoln Square Mall, Urbana. The Art Mart is pleased to support public radio in East Central Illinois. Tomorrow morning on the show, Dr. Robert Bocek will be here at 10 o'clock. He is a pediatrician and for a long time has been here once a month, always on a Thursday, to answer questions about children's health. Then in the second hour of the program, we'll be talking with historian Patricia Brady, and we will be talking about the life of Martha Washington. Patricia Brady has just authored a new biography of Martha Washington. That'll be tomorrow in the second hour of the show. We're here weekday mornings, 10 to noon, 10 different topics every week. We always welcome your questions and comments. And right now, we hope that you will stay tuned, because coming up next, it's the Afternoon Magazine. The host of the show, Celeste Quinn.
Thank you, David. Coming up today in the 1 o'clock hour of the Afternoon Magazine, we'll look back at the largest army court-martial of World War II. It involved the lynching of an Italian POW in custody in Seattle. The year was 1944. Three African-American soldiers were charged with murder. 40 other black soldiers were charged with rioting. Our guest at 106, journalist Jack Hammond, author of On American Soil. Let's take a look now at prices on the Chicago Board of Trade. September wheat trading at 3.32 1/4, down 6 1/4. December 3.46 1/4, down 5 3/4. September corn 2.40 3/4, down 7 3/4. December 2.51 1/4, down 7 3/4. March corn 2.57, down 7 1/2. May 2.59 1/2, down 7. August soybeans 6.77 1/2, down 5. September 6.81, down 4 1/2. November 6.86, down 5. August soybean meal 2.13 even, down 1.10. August oil